My name is Carolyn Hines, and I am 36 years old. Today is April 28th, 2019, and I'm speaking with my father, Warren Hines. We are recording this interview in Sacramento, California. So, over 50 years ago, you survived one of the largest earthquakes in U.S. history. Tell me about Friday, March 27th, 1964, in Anchorage, Alaska.
I was home from school. I was Good Friday, March 27th, 1964. I was in the kitchen and getting a drink of water by the sink, and it was 5:36 p.m.
How old were you in 1964?
I was 18. Mm-hmm. I was a senior at West Anchorage High School.
Mm-hmm. And what neighborhood did you guys live in?
We lived in a subdivision called Turnagain by the Sea. Mm-hmm. In Anchorage. The house is located on top of a bank. Mm-hmm. About 70 feet tall, overlooking Cook Inlet.
How long did you guys live there?
And this is about our ninth year living there. I moved out there in 54.
How many families do you think were in the neighborhood? Was it a pretty big neighborhood?
Yes, I think we lived on a street in which the houses were all built along this bluff. Mm-hmm. And then we probably had a dozen neighbors on the bluff with us. And there was a fairly large subdivision off in the main body of the subdivision by the main highway that came into it.
Okay. And where were your parents and the rest of the family that day? And who was home with you?
My father was an optometrist. He was downtown at his optical dispensary. My mother, at the time of the quake, was driving in the driveway. Mm-hmm. And my little sister, Mitzi, she was 4 years old, was taking a nap in the back bedroom. Mm-hmm. Her bedroom.
So grandma was on her way home. She was on her way to the house. She was out shopping? Or?
Yeah, she was out getting groceries. And, okay. And at the time of the quake, she was had just entered the driveway.
Okay, so the earthquake started at 5:36 p.m. What were you doing when the shaking started? What do you remember?
I was in the kitchen, just getting a glass to get a drink of water when all of a sudden the slight shaking, which I was quite familiar with. I'd grown up with and gone through lots of earthquakes up there. We're in a seismic active territory up there, and so I recognized it as a shaking from what seemed to be a very normal light earthquake. My sister Mitzi began crying in the rear bedroom, and I yelled down the hall at her. I said, told her to don't worry about it. It'll go away, and as they always did, and we just had to ride it out. And so it seemed to, of the gentleness the way it started, I just seemed to think it was going to dissipate, and that would be that.
Mm-hmm. And then as it started, you said it started out kind of light, and then how did it kind of progress? How did it go?
Well, I noticed it started to build into a stronger quake, so I thought, I better go down the hall and see if Mitzi is okay. So by the time I walked from the kitchen to the hallway that led back to the bedrooms, it had then ramped up to what I thought was a very unusually strong earthquake. And we had always been taught to stand in a doorway, which I did, at the beginning of the hallway that led to the back bedrooms. And I stood there for just half a minute waiting for it to dissipate, but it didn't. It just kept building in intensity. Mm-hmm. And by the time by the time I'd waited to go back to the rear bedroom, it was in full force, and it was I began to see destruction in the house.
What were you seeing around you?
I was seeing the walls going buckling on 30-degree angles and sliding and going straight up and then going to the other way on a 30-degree angle. I saw my father had a large Alaska oil painting. It was flung up on the wall 180 degrees so I could see the complete back of it, and it did that probably five or six times until the canvas cartwheeled out of it and the frame broke into pieces and hung on the nail. And when I saw my father's stone fireplace suddenly disintegrate and I saw big massive pieces of stone come down and crush my mother's coffee table, that's when I thought, but I'd always been taught to ride out under a doorway, so I just continued to stand there, kind of dumbstruck, looking at this destruction. That I thought, hey, this has never happened before, and not knowing really what to do. And suddenly I heard this voice in my head, get Mitzi and get out. And not knowing where the voice came from, I heeded the advice and I ran back to the back bedroom, grabbed my sister Mitzi, who was 4 years old, tucked her under my arm like a football, and ran through the hallway and got to the front door. But the front door wouldn't open because the walls were buckling on 30 degree slants from the tremendous force of the quake, which pinched the door shut. And so I had to put one hand on the doorknob and then one foot against the wall. The other hand held my sister, and when the walls came up a plumb at 90 degrees straight up, the door flew open, and then I just flew out with her, which then presented a bunch of other obstacles, because the patio, our cement patio outside the front door, was grinding into pieces and going, looked like, into a hole. The houses across the street, I could see two of them were on, I would say, 20 degree angles and sliding in my direction. Both of them were sliding towards me. The ground looked as if I were a small bug on a large jigsaw puzzle, and somebody was spreading the pieces out of the jigsaw puzzle, and it was coming to part in just millions of pieces. I could hear trees being split. A large spruce in our front yard was split right in two, and I could hear that splitting as the ground was breaking. And so I happened to notice a piece of ground that seemed to be pushing up into the air. So I thought, well, maybe that I'll bank on that. That was my best choice. So I jumped over the patio that was kind of grinding into a hole. It was all broken up into pieces. Jumped over that, but managed to get up on the other side of the patio and then run towards the piece of ground that was beginning to rise in the air, and stood there. And it carried us probably, by the time the quake ended, I was about maybe 25 to 30 feet in the air.
Wow.
And
what sounds do you remember as everything is going on around you? You said the splitting of trees.
A tremendous roar, the splitting of trees. I could hear people screaming in the distance. I think they were neighbors in the next house. I could hear a woman screaming.
Was Mitzi crying?
She was crying, but yet she was fairly, I think she was as dumbstruck as I was. She was fairly, she cried as we were leaving the house, and then I guess with what she was seeing outside as I had her under my arm, she was kind of in shock. We both were in shock, the force of this, the quake carried this massive piece of ground up vertically. And
about how many feet in the air?
I would say between 25 and 30 feet. And a strange thing, I thought when I'd first run out of the house, I thought I'd seen my mother yelling at me, standing in the yard before everything broke up. And then I couldn't see her anymore, couldn't hear her or see her. And I thought, well, maybe it was just a mirage. Maybe I was just imagining things because of the horrific destruction that was going on in front of me. I thought, well, maybe she just disappeared, and if she was there, or it was just a figment of my imagination. So I didn't give it much credence anymore, because I was busy holding Mitzi, and this piece of ground kept pushing me up, and I was watching. I looked over at our house, just completely going into pieces, the walls collapsing and the roof collapsing down on top of our house, breaking apart, mm-hmm. and seemed like it was going into a hole. And as I looked around me, complete destruction. The whole landmass was sliding, and this hill I was which I'd been pushed up on the air on was sliding along with everything else and out towards the inlet. And it seemed to be, and I guessed it right, we were in the middle of a huge landslide because of the liquefaction action of the ground, because of the wet clay under the ground. We have a large deposit of that blue inlet clay, which is a wet clay, becomes wet and very slippery when activated. And this quake was enough to activate the liquefaction, which intensified the shaking even more.
So the quake lasted about 4.5-5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And did you eventually stop sliding? Did you eventually, when the shaking stopped?
It eventually stopped. And the frightening thing was, when the quake stopped, usually in our yard, you could always hear birds chirping. You could hear traffic noise in the distance, the hum of traffic noise, just the hum of the city noises. And the second this stopped, I had never heard such deathly silence for I don't know how many minutes. Maybe it could have gone on 10 minutes. It was just a dead, deathly silence, just nothing.
How long do you think you stood there on that piece of ground before you started to move?
I probably was there 10 minutes, and then I heard a shouting, and I turned around, and it was our neighbor, Robert Atwood, a next-door neighbor who was the editor and publisher of the Anchorage Times newspaper. He was running. I could see him running over the destruction towards me. I could barely make out who it was, and as he got closer and closer, I could see it was him. And by the time he got up to Mitzi and I on this mound where we were standing, he always wore these really nice suits, and his whole suit was covered with inlet blue clay. He was just covered, and his voice was shaking, and he said, "I was just about buried to death in my house," and he said, "I just about lost it."
What was he doing in his home when the earthquake started?
He was home practicing his trumpet. His wife was and daughter, I guess, were at the grocery store, and he just learned to take up a trumpet. He was almost at retirement age, and it was home learning to play this trumpet when the quake started. So he ran out of the house with the trumpet, and when the walls pushed in and all the mud and clay came into his house and started to bury him, he had to let go of the trumpet, and he used everything, both his feet and his arms, to propel himself out of the, keep propelling himself out of this moving dirt. And so he lost his trumpet, and he crawled over the dirt up into the higher ground, and
that's where he found you.
To save himself, yeah. Mm-hmm. And by the time he stood up and the quake stopped and he could see us, mm-hmm. standing there, and then he walked over to us, but he was in complete shock.
And you guys were talking together, and then did you start, I mean, heading towards the bank, or did you hear other people?
I could hear other people. This one woman, that I heard scream during the quake, I could hear her calling out for people or for help, and there's no way we could reach her. I think she was a next door neighbor. I couldn't see her. I couldn't see her house because it had been destroyed. So Bob indicated to Mitzi and I that we should start hiking out to the new bank that had been formed in front of the slide area, or actually in back of the slide area, where the destruction stopped. The subdivision was pretty much intact, the ground, and the new bank had formed where this landmass had slid off from. So Bob led the way, and he said, "Follow me, and we all have to get out of here, in case we, you know, anything else happens. We could all be killed out here if this whole thing started up again." We didn't know. We were getting a little aftershocks at that time. We could feel aftershocks where we were standing, and so we began to hike out of this destruction and of the area of destruction. And we'd probably been about 10 minutes going around hills and jumping across little crevasses, and we heard, also I heard my mother's voice. She was going, "Yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo, I'm up here." And Bob turned to me and he said, "Warren, it's your mother." And I turned to Bob and I said, "God, I thought I'd seen her when I left, you know, when I left the house with Mitzi running out, but I didn't know what happened to her. She just disappeared because of the destruction." And she was up on a mound, the same kind of a mound I was, that Mitzi and I had been on, and it was just big enough to handle the car and her. It's like they were both perched on top of a pinnacle.
How high in the air?
Probably about the same height. Wow. I mean, she was up there quite a ways, and we were down on the bottom of one of these crevasses. And so we asked her to, Bob told her, "Now, Margaret, get down on your seat and slide down, just slide down towards us, and we'll catch you." And so she did that, and she slid down towards us, and she was, you know, she was all alone there when this happened, and she, it was a miracle that, just like it was a miracle I saw this piece of ground right up in the air, it was a miracle that she just stood where she was, but the ground broke away from her. It could have very well, you know, just given away and buried her in the car, and we would have never seen either one of them, and I would have really never known what happened to her, because two of our neighbor boys were buried in the same way. They wrote, they ran back, and or actually one ran back in the house to get his brother, was a doctor's. They were doctor's children, a local doctor, and he ran in, I think, to get his son or get his brother, excuse me, ran in to get his little brother, and they were both never seen again, both buried to death.
So you saw Grandma, and you guys were able to get down together in the same area, did you make up your way up towards the bank?
Yeah, we hiked over towards the existing newly formed bank, and there were men with ropes there that threw ropes down, and we were able to hang on to the ropes, and we pushed, both Bob and I lifted Mom up, and we got her up, and then got Mitzi up, and then Bob kind of pushed me up on one part of the mound, and then I grabbed a rope and they pulled me up, and then it took me and all those men to get Bob up. He was a fairly big man, and it took all of us to pull him up. So we made it. We finally got up on the new bank.
And when you got up there, did you guys head to a neighbor's house? Did you stay there for a while?
We headed towards a neighbor's house about a half a block away. I was in my, I didn't have my shoes on. I just had socks on. And so my feet were getting cold. And this my doctor lived in the neighborhood, and he was there. And he said, "Warren, you've got to get something on your feet."
Because it was still March. Was there still snow on the ground?
There was still snow, but the ground was actually warm because it had all broken apart and pushed up. And so the Dr. Wilkins, my doctor that was there with the rest of the men on the bank witnessing this, they told me to bury my feet in the dirt till they could get me some footwear. So anyway, we decided maybe about 100 feet away, there was a nearby neighbor's house. His name was Craig Taylor. He owned an equipment company in Anchorage. So we all knew who he was. So they suggested, why don't you go over to the Taylor's? Their house is okay, and I'm sure he has some boots or something that can put on your feet, which we did. And so we ran over to their house, and we got into their house, and he got me some footwear, and I just put them on when we got a really bad aftershock at his house. And so he grabbed Mitzi, Craig Taylor grabbed Mitzi while I was grabbing my, trying to put my borrowed pair of his boots on, and we all started running out of his house, and the sidewalk was slippery and we all fell. Mm-hmm. It started to really shake again and really rattle his house, and we just made it out of his front door, and all of us fell down on the ground. He dropped Mitzi, and I tried to pick up Mitzi in the ground, and then the ground threw me down on top of Mitzi, and we were all lying on the ground, and he yelled, everybody just stay there, don't try to stand up. And then finally it stopped, the aftershock stopped, and then we were all able to get up and then leave his house and go out in the street, which was intact, so that we could get away from any structure in case another bad aftershock came.
And how many aftershocks would you say happened that day and in the days after? There were quite a few, but in that first day,
I think we had a bad aftershock about every morning that I remember, and that night we had aftershocks all through the night. And it seemed like they came, like for a month it seems like they would come every morning, like about 5 or 6 o'clock we get a 5 or 6 point aftershock.
Wow.
And it just really rattled your nerves, because everybody had been through, it just kind of would bring you back to that moment, the aftershocks, and they were, it was very unnerving to go through that.
So once you were at the Taylors, then Lloyd, your dad, Grandpa, did he head home, and did you guys see him, or what happened?
He headed home, but we didn't see him. He came, we were taken to a old-time Alaskan family's home where they were going to put us up. I forget who told us to go there, but somebody suggested we go there. They were taking people, and so we knew them, and so we went over to their house, and I think maybe it was when we were on the way to their house, Lloyd finally left his optical practice downtown. They had to pick up everything off the floor and clean up their the office downtown, because everything was a horrible mess down there. And then when he finally left, it took him a while to get out to Turnagain, because the roads, there were big cracks in the roads. And then by the time he got to the house and hiked down into the destructive area, we weren't there. He could see we weren't there, and he asked a boy nearby, a teenage boy, he said, "Did you see my family?" And he could barely talk, because he saw the condition the house was in. He thought we were all in it, and that we had all been buried alive in the house. So he lost his voice, and he was just whispering, because he was in shock, total shock, and he tried to talk to this teenage boy to ask about the family, and all he could bring up were whispers, because his voice just went. He couldn't even.
You said he lost his voice for a couple days, or he was like that for a
I would say for a day or so. He was, and then he finally met up with us later that night, at these people's house. It was the Prosser family, who were lifetime Alaskans, and they agreed to take us in. Mm-hmm. And so he met up, someone must have told him in that location. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the men that helped us up the bank, mm-hmm. where we had gone. And so he later on, it took him a few hours, but he did make it over to the Prosser's mm-hmm. house, where he met up with us.
Okay.
And we were all reunited probably about, like between 7 and 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I think he finally made it over there.
So how many days or weeks did you stay with the Prosser family?
Probably for a week. We slept on their floor, and we all just kind of camped. They all had, they had running water, they had electricity. A lot of places in town didn't. So, mm-hmm. But we were all in shock. I spent the days just kind of sitting, staring at their. They had a log coffee table that was smoothed off on the top of the plate of glass on top of this large log, and I would stare at this coffee table for hours because I think I was reprocessing, trying to reprocess my mind and my thoughts, because I realized, you know, in 3 minutes, you not only lost your home with all your neighbors, but you lost your entire neighborhood. It was just wiped off the map. And I just couldn't come to terms with it. And so I would just sit there most of the time during the day. I would just sit and stare and try and think, you know, try and process what had happened. Mm-hmm. Because it was just like a huge bomb dropping and wiping the landscape. I couldn't bring it to terms with myself that mm-hmm. this had truly happened, and mm-hmm. and the destruction, witnessing that type of destruction, which I later would find out that we, because of the liquefaction, had witnessed total destruction, probably close to a 12 point. Mm-hmm. Because of the force of the liquefaction magnifying the magnitude of the quake.
Didn't you run into some experts sent from out of state during your kind of salvaging rubble out in the neighborhood?
Yeah, my father Lloyd and I were salvaging things out of the house about a week later, and we would crawl in. Being that the roof had collapsed on top of the house, we would have to crawl in on our stomachs under the roof and crawl into places and try and pull stuff out, clothing. And there were other parts of the house that you could actually walk in, and even though it was completely slanted, to like 30-degree angles collapsed, but you could walk in and get certain things out. But we were pulling some personal things out of the bedroom area, and we heard these voices, and there was two men, they had white beards, they're very professor looking type gentlemen, and it turns out they were professors, and they were from the La Jolla, California area. They were from some institute, and I don't know if it was Richter or I can't exactly remember the college or the institution they were from, but they had backpacks with you know, their clipboards and stuff for measuring and weighing, and so they stopped and interviewed me, being that I was in the house. Lloyd, my father, said, well, you know, my son here was in the house, so you talk to him. I was downtown, and he could give you a better description of the shaking. So I described the buckling of the walls. I described how objects were thrown around, such as that painting that came up 180 degrees and slammed, and with a canvas cartwheeling, and how my mother had large brass stagecoach-type lamps, and how they flew across the room, and the collapsing of the fireplace. And they said because of this liquefaction action present under the Turnagain area, that I probably witnessed total destruction somewhere beyond a 12. Hmm. He said, you all witnessed total destruction. And then he pointed, one of the professors who told me that, pointed over at the neighbor's house, Bob Atwood's house, the man we hiked out of the area with. His house had totally sank out of sight. The walls collapsed, the mud came in, and even buried the roof. And he said, you just have to look at your neighbor's house, who that isn't even there anymore, to discern how powerful this thing was. Mm-hmm. To move structures like that, to collapse them and then to bury them, mm-hmm. He said, it's just unbelievable. He said, you can't even barely put it into words.
Were you able to get some things out of the house, a few personal items, or was most of it?
We got some furniture items where the roof hadn't completely collapsed down. We were able to pull some furniture out. Mm-hmm. We were able to pull, and we rescued the an organ that we had there, Hammond organ, some chairs, a table, a small table we were able to carry out, and some clothing. But other than that,
not much.
The bedrooms, I know my father's bedroom sank out of sight. the ceiling collapsed on the beds in the bedrooms. The glue lamp beams came down, crushed both beds where Mitzi had been sleeping, had been taking her nap. It crushed her bed. If she hadn't been lifted out of that, she would have been crushed to death, because both the beds were pinned. My bed and the bed she was sleeping on, the next bedroom, both of them were smashed by the big glue lamp beams and the ceiling that came down on them. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the bedrooms and both bathrooms in the hallway, they sank completely out of sight, as well as the basement. The basement just completely was gone.
Lost everything.
Yeah. And we lost everything in the basement.
And then after spending, a week with those neighbors or those friends, how long did it take you to get settled into a new place to live, a new residence?
We were able to obtain there was a house for rent in a subdivision nearby, a few miles away, and we were able to rent a house there. My father was a developer at the time, and he knew some people who or a person that was renting a house to some folks that were giving it up, and we were able to stay there, and I was able to finish the school year out. And
there was some damage to your high school also.
Yeah, our high school was heavily damaged. The whole second story was damaged. The walls pushed out of the second story in the high school and buckled and pushed all the desks out of the second story. So it's a good thing students weren't there, or they would have very badly
there was
injured.
No school that day.
There was no school that day. And and one school, the Government Hill School, was completely destroyed. It was completely collapsed. And everyone always said that the children in that school, most of them probably would have died under the rubble of the complete collapsed, because of the collapsing structure. It was just a pile of rubble. And they figured that none of the little children would have made it out there. In fact, people mentioned that it was a Good Friday. If this had to happen, it was a Good Friday, because the quake happened at a time at 5:36 when, number one, no children were in school. Number two, most people were on the roads going home, so they weren't in structures that collapsed. There was a store, Penny's store, collapsed uptown, and there were some buildings, people working in, collapsed uptown. So most people were in their cars on the road going home, which is the safest place you could have been. Mm-hmm. So they considered that it was a Good Friday.
And then years later, so in the, was it the 1980s or late 80s, early 90s, you used to tell me that you and Mary, my mom, you guys would go biking or go along the coastal trail, and you guys found some rubble from your house?
Yes, we had two young daughters that we were living in a condo at the time, and we had a babysitter taking care of them. And Mary and I decided to go on a bike ride down the coastal trail. And so as we went down Anchorage's coastal trail from the downtown area where we were living to the Turnagain Heights, Turnagain by the Sea area, that slid where all this destruction took place that I've described, the trail went right through this area. Now this area by then had been leveled out. The Corps of Engineers had leveled the area out and graded it flat, and this coastal trail went through this area, and there had been some rebuilding of some homes in the area. So as Mary and I were riding, as my wife Mary and I were riding out into this area, we decided to just stop and go down, because it had nice sandy beaches in this area. And we decided to go off the coastal trail and go walking on the beach. and just I don't know if we really meant to look for rubble or not, but we just decided to hike along the beach, and then I started seeing things, that started recognizing things from our house. I found under this collapsed log on the beach, I found a red radio my mother had on our refrigerator in the kitchen. Hmm. And I found it under a log. It was completely rusted by then. This was probably 87, 88.
We were there a few times with you, weren't we?
I think so. Mm-hmm. And then I began to see pieces of plates, china plates, coming up from the sand. I recovered my dad's University of Ohio plate, his school, college plate, pieces of it. Mm-hmm. My mother's apple pattern china, actually tile from both. We had two bathrooms in the hallway that sank out of sight. One we called the pink powder room, and one was the green master bathroom, a green tile in there and pink tile in the powder room, and I found both tiles pushing up through the sand. Mm. And here this was, you know, this is 20 years later. Mm. And it was like the sands of time, old saying of the sands of time, where things, you know, kind of come up, you know, through the sands of time, and there's all this familiar tile and plate pattern china being pushed up, so it kind of really made it a kind of an exciting bike ride and picnic that we were having.
Do you guys still have some of those things?
I think we did collect a Ziploc of the china. I haven't seen it though in a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. If we still have it.
And then you know, thinking about all of your experiences, and this story always resonated with me through childhood, remembering this story and you tell it. And then more recently, November of this past year, 2018, Anchorage had another large earthquake, this time with a magnitude of 7.1. And a pretty large aftershock. What was it like to go through such a large earthquake, not as powerful as the 64 quake, but what was it like to kind of re-experience such a large earthquake again?
Well, this was a different, a little bit different, because we were both, my wife Mary and I were in bed when this quake hit, and it hit at 8:30, about 8:30 in the morning. Mary got up right away and hung on to I think one of the dressers to the side of the bed, and I just lay there deep in thought, thinking, oh my gosh, here we go again. This was a 7.1. It was less of a Richter scale intensity. It wasn't like the 9.2, but during the 64 quake, we were between 200 and 300 miles from the epicenter down in Prince William Sound. This time we were only about 10 miles from the epicenter, and that makes a large difference. So the shaking was very intensified. I think most people Mary and I've talked to in Anchorage, when we talk about this quake back last November 30th, they use the word, and we use the same word, as violent. It was extremely violent. It just shook the house back and forth, and I lay there kind of in shock. I think maybe it brought up a lot of memories from the past, and with a cold sweat on my face, I just kind of thought to myself, oh my God, we're in for another, you know, some more destruction. I thought our house was going to be badly damaged. Mm. And Mary did too, but both Mary and I, you know, expected, you know, really heavy damage from this, the way it was shaking. Mm-hmm. But lucky for us, it only went on for you know, a little over a minute. Mm-hmm. But I think if it had gone on any longer, or if the intensity, if the Richter scale magnitude had been larger, I think we would have had significant house damage. We were very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. Anything you want to add or any last thoughts?
Well, Mary and I were talking about it the other day, how people would say right after the big quake in 64, oh, you'll never see another quake like this again, and ever see a quake shake like this, and you'll never have to worry about ever going through anything like this. And yet, just from 64 up to, you know, 2019 there, or 2018, there we are. Here's another one, you know, 50 some years later, to go through something violent again. So when people tell you that, you know, these things hit every, might be hundreds of years till one hits like this, don't believe it, because it can very easily, I feel it can very easily happen again. Mary also went through the 64 quake too, but she was uptown at her parents' home in Anchorage, where there was no land collapse, and everything stayed, the land stayed pretty much intact. She was a lot younger than I was, and she was in the sixth grade, so she doesn't remember it as well as I do. But she was very fortunate that their land stayed together uptown, and it made a lot of difference where you were in Anchorage, because they just wrote it out in their basement, and it, you know, it was a terrible shaking, and they all got, you know, pretty scary experience out of it. But where the land collapsed and had this liquefaction problem, and you had the land fault, you know, break apart like that, it caused other people to have a more horrific death-defying experience. So it really depended where you were.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for sharing, for all the people who haven't heard your story of the 64 quake, and for future generations to hear your words and your history. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.